City Queer Cast.
Gays and lesbians are all the rage.
We're here and we're queer.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
We're talking mega gay.
Ooh, I like that.
I'm Peter Maverick.
I'm Amy Matheny. This Queer Cast is brought to you in part by
Bud Light. Always worth it. American Airlines. Offering the GLBT community exciting vacation packages online at aa.com/rainbow. LaSalle Bank. LaSalle Bank, making more possible.
Hey everybody, you're listening to the Windy City Queer Cast, show number 42. I'm Amy Matheny.
And I'm Peter Maverick.
How are you?
I'm good. I'm excited. You know why?
Why?
Because the snow's coming.
Oh, come on. Fuck off. Fuck off. I can't handle it.
I love, they said, I got so happy when they said flurry was coming. You're not a snow person?
I love the snow, but let the fucking leaves turn red, yellow, and orange, and let me enjoy them, because it's like, the leaves have changed one day and we get to enjoy them for four and they're just yellow. They have only gone to yellow and now we're getting a snow and they're going to be on the floor. They're going to be on the ground in my yard, nasty and mucky with the snow because they haven't been able to appropriately fall and then me break them up. They're going to be deteriorating. Can I go on about it? Kill my grass? I'm going to be a big
pessimist
about this whole thing.
I'm a concrete apartment dweller, so I don't really have.
I just, you know, here's the deal. I mean, I understand that we get a short fall, we get a short spring, and my allergies love that.
Right.
They say hurrah to that. But if you've never been to Chicago, we really only have two seasons.
Yeah.
And it's winter.
Uh-huh.
And summer, don't miss it. Right. I mean, that's it. I mean, we have no spring, we have no fall.
Right.
And I love the spring and fall. And I was just in upstate New York for, a trip, and the leaves are just,
Oh, the colors, I bet.
I just hit the peak weekend this past weekend, folks.
Man.
I was up in kind of Martha Stewart tag sale. They don't have yard sales. They have tag sales,
sale.
In like Rhinebeck, where everybody's walking with like their French bulldog. And and antique shops, they're having tag sales. I'm like, hey, this is your shit. You just pulled out of your basement.
Right.
This is like, I mean, granted.
It's a rummage sale, woman.
It is a rummage sale. And where I come from, we call it yard sale.
Yeah.
And people are ringing on your doorbell at 6 a.m. because you put up the signs the night before.
Wow.
And they're like, get up. We won't buy some shit, you know?
I mean, we do it here as garage sales. That's our big thing.
Yeah, Chicago's garage sales. In the South, it's a yard sale.
Yeah.
I don't know where it's a rummage sale. I don't know what the hell a tag sale is, but Martha Stewart goes to tag sales. You know,
She's
like, advise me about stuff on the New England coast. You go to tag sales. I go with my chow and my Frenchie. I mean, it's like,
Do you know why they call those chow dogs chows?
Because
that's the dog you eat in. Those are the dogs that you eat in China.
You do not.
They eat the black dogs.
No, they do not.
My
dog's part chow. Don't even
That's
say
why they
that.
Call
she's
it chow. Well, she's only getting a part eaten.
That is not true.
It is.
It's not true.
In Korea,
they were imperialists. They were like dogs of the king were the chow.
Yeah,
the
and the black ones they ate.
Oh, mine's not black.
Well, see, she's okay then.
Well, Martha Stewart's is red too, so.
Oh, okay, so she wouldn't get eaten. Rummage sale is always in the basement of the church. That's weird.
Right,
where we
that's
have
the rummage sale.
Big piles of clothes that smelled like Fritos.
But it was so romantic being up there, up in the Catskills, up in like that whole area and where I was, because, you know, driving past the streets, the houses are so cute. And even McDonald's look quaint up there because of those little low signs. You know, there was really not one in Rhinebeck where I was doing the tag sale. But the... But passing a tag sale, I was driving by and I was like, oh my God, there were like those snow shoes that you used to see in catalogs that looked
like
wicker.
Tennis rackets?
Yeah, like tennis rackets.
Wow.
I wanted to buy those, but I didn't.
What would you, well, I guess today you just sort of put them on the wall. Although, knowing Chicago, you could probably get some use out of them.
Martha
at some
Stewart
point.
Would have made a lovely centerpiece out of this.
She would have put it on a cake and put
Strung
fondant
it with
around
some
it.
Mums, you know, and. Plop it in your pumpkin. I
Only
don't know.
Martha. Well, speaking of Martha, all Saturday I was a lazy oaf. I didn't really leave the house, and I watched cooking shows from dawn till dusk.
Okay, can I ask a question? I have a gay male friend with me who's in town. My friend Scott, who's in the show Say You Love Satan, and we're going to be dealing
with
him.
Precious looking. He's so cute. He's got
cute
highlights.
He just got his cute highlights redone today. Mm-hmm. And so he has his day off because Say You Love Satan, which we're going to be interviewing the boys. You know, they're coming on the show here soon, so be stay tuned for that. Mm-hmm. Very funny show. But and I digress, but it's on point. He's sitting on the couch because he came into my house, and he's like, can I watch some television this afternoon? I'm like, sure. And all he wanted to do was watch The Barefoot Contessa. And he's sitting there like watching, you know, cooking shows on the Food Network. And I'm like, what is it with gay men and my mother and cooking shows?
You know
like,
what it is? Wait, now, did he have a notepad or not? Was he taking notes or not?
I just think he was enjoying her.
Okay, so if he wasn't taking notes, then he's the kind of boy who just loves and appreciates good food.
Okay.
If he was taking notes, though,
yes,
he's the kind of boy who's trying to impress somebody.
Ah. So there, which boy are you, Peter?
I'm a little from column A and a little from column B right now.
Good.
Yeah,
good. I like that.
The world is...
You've been learning to bake?
I have. I've been learning to bake. I'm on to sautéing and pan frying. We did sauces a long time ago. Me and Julia are really tight.
Good.
So my velouté, my bechamel, my roux is all...
I'm so glad you're my gay husband.
Everything is in line there. I made well, you saw my cook a baby pot. I made chicken stock. You could cook a small child in the pot.
You made beautiful cider for me for my birthday.
Thank you.
It was brilliant and fragrant and filled my whole house for an entire week with just
I know you
smells.
Were all thinking like this goddamn cinnamon's no. knocking it out.
Oh no, it was fabulous. I loved it. And you know, a little tip, because I know we loved the Alpenissing book, which we adore.
Love. I still keep flipping through it.
But you know what's another companion piece of the Alpenissing book for the wine is that they are reissuing out The Joy of Cooking book this year. It's coming out here in a couple of months, and it will be, you know, the last reissue got a lot of flack because instead of using the can of mushroom soup, which was the original shit that they put in there, they were saying, here's how to make a bechamel sauce.
Absolutely.
And they're like, that's not The Joy of Cooking. So I believe the hope is that it is going back to the early women who, you know, who created Joy of Cooking, and then it's kind of going to go, the new issue is going to celebrate that. I think it's 75 years. I don't know. Can't remember. Wow. Don't quote me. I'm not really doing this as a news story. It's just
I wonder,
you know,
what the
mindless
spinach
shit that I have in my head.
I wonder what the spinach chapter is going to be like.
Spinach. Yeah. I think it was already printed.
Right.
So
you need to there's a little that little correct all tape. Like boil it for an extra 30 minutes.
Yes. Stick your little a piece of litmus paper in there. Make sure it's not going to kill you. Give me the runs.
Absolutely. What you know, it's food and music. You really don't need much more. Do you play music when you cook?
When I boil eggs and when I chop salads, I don't play music. I usually just like talk to my dog who comes and sits in the floor. My dog and I talk when I'm in the kitchen and
cooking.
That's
good.
She's great. She comes and lies right in the middle of the floor and kind of looks up at me. It's not because she really wants the scraps at all that might fall on the floor. She just enjoys being with
me
in the kitchen.
She just likes being with
me,
yeah.
Yeah.
My naked cats lean against the oven when it's on.
Oh.
They're going to fry themselves
one day.
Well,
at least they got to burn their hair. They don't have any. They're hairless. Well, you know, speaking of music, when I was a young lass, a young, thinking myself heterosexual lass, and I was never married, according to anybody who might think from the Oprah.com website that I actually was a gay wife who was once married. I was never married, and I'm a little worried. I'm like, should I write Harpo Studios and tell them that I was never married? And they kind of don't say that I was or wasn't, but it alludes to it. But anyhow, when I was in junior high, which is when girls start getting crushes on guys, because that's what they do, I was crushed out on all the girly men. I had Duran Duran posters all over, and the more makeup and the longer the hair, like John Taylor, Nick Rose, loved them.
The fire.
And then there was Andrew Ridgeley. Now, Wham was my band. I loved Wham. Duran Duran was really my band, but I loved Wham. Mm-hmm. And I just thought Andrew Ridgeley did not get his props. And George Michael, of course, is the queer. But Andrew Ridgeley was so pretty, and he was so soft, and I just loved him.
He was so soft.
He was so soft looking. And, you know, George Michael is out on tour because I guess he needs money.
Well, honey, he's got legal fees.
He does. What is wrong with him?
I don't know. I think he's in that continuum of aging gay men that are unhappy. And it's so sad because I know so many aging gay men that are happy, but I think he's partying a little too much. You know, Rupert Everett's doing the same thing. He's real bitter right now. He's writing his little tell all. He's mad about it. He's mad about getting old and being gay.
Is he really?
Yeah.
He's had such a fucking brilliant career to be openly gay.
Yeah,
and
but he, you know, honey, leave it to a queen to
bitch about it. He didn't get his props,
right?
Is what you're saying.
Well, he's alone. and Elton's got somebody. So, you know, I think everybody looks to Elton for, especially the Brits, for their relationship inspiration.
Well, George Michael, I don't know if he's comparing himself to Elton or not, but he's on tour.
He is.
And he's going to do a night. He's going to do a holiday show with Andrew Ridgeley, where they're going to do all the Wham! Shows. Do you think that our boss would send us to go do a podcast of it over in the UK?
Tracy, if you're listening,
we'll talk
honey.
To her about that.
Let's go. Let's go slam bam with the Wham!
They were in that song, you know, the feed the world.
Oh, yeah.
Let them know it's Christmas time. You think they'll sing that because it's a Christmas? That was Bob Geldof.
Oh, yeah.
Remember?
Yeah.
And it was like Bob Geldof. It was all the, was it Bob Geldof? No. Bob Geldof was.
It was after We Are the World. That's all I remember.
We Are the World was Bob Geldof. I don't remember who said it. Maybe he did too there. But probably it was all the Brits, you know. It was all the British singers.
It sure was. There was a lot of bad teeth in that video. That's what I remember.
Yeah. At Christmas time.
Yeah.
And there were a lot of queers.
It's Christmas after. Yeah. Well, you know, I think, were they gay or were they Euro trash? You can't quite tell.
I don't know. What was the European We Are the World? Is that the song? We're singing the right song. Yeah.
Yeah, I think
so. So say a prayer for the lonely one.
It was a very Christmas scene.
I don't know. See, I really liked the UK music, so I remember theirs better than even We Are the World. I can hardly remember it.
I was into the house and the dance and the Jets. Don't call me when your radio went off in the middle of your favorite. Do you remember the Jets?
Baby, don't even know who you're talking
about. I can rock it to you. It was on the coattails of Miami Sound Machine. It was a whole Latino band.
I loved them, but I didn't know
they were
anybody
like super
Laura.
Pop. Wow, the Jets has a 20th Century Masters compilation on iTunes that I purchased. It's delicious.
Well, I'm sure you're going to write about it in Night Spot, so
everybody
should check
well,
it out.
I wrote about it ages ago. But I am going to write about, and I'm going back on my word, the Fergster, Miss Fergie, from the Black Eyed Peas. Her album is sickening good.
Is it really?
It's really
good. Can't listen to that
really
London Bridge song.
No, that song is the worst on the album.
All right, well, pick out a few good songs.
I will.
Maybe you can instruct me on them.
I will. We'll tease people. We'll tease people with
maybe them. The next podcast, you should have to give me a few songs and pepper in some Fergie just so I
there
can see if you can sell me on it.
Just a little. I think I might have to do that. I think I will do it. And folks, speaking of music, we have the woman who does it all. She's an actress. She's a singer. She is on all screens you possibly have in your house. She's probably in all mechanical devices. And stage. She's all over the stage, singing and acting and doing it all. Going to play one of my favorite parts, Fontaine, coming up. Daphne Rubin Vega is with us on the show, and she just is such an eloquent speaker, first and foremost.
I love her.
She was such a joy
to
have on the
show. This is what they do.
They
go, give us a Latin chick. And they go, Daphne Rubin Vega. Like, she gets all the work. She gets all the jobs, and she's that good.
She really, really and truly is.
You probably
really
know her from
is.
Mimi from Rent,
Rent.
The original Rent, not the movie, which I didn't like. And
didn't really care
and
for the movie,
I was really glad she wasn't in it because I didn't like it. But the musical was a phenomenon, and she was really probably one of the most major standout performances, I thought.
I mean, scene stealing without being scene stealing.
Yeah.
But she is with us on the show today.
Yay! And her music.
And her music, of course. And as always, we have Logan Schwartz and Grubinier from the 25th annual Putnam County Spelling Bee is joining us to let us know what's in her bonnet, the bee in her bonnet.
Yeah.
And we've got lots of news for you. So
that's right.
Show.
And hey, folks, don't forget coming up next week on Monday, we want you to join us at Sidetrack 3349 North Halsted Street. Join us at Sidetrack at the corner of Halsted and Roscoe. It's a free party, folks, from 7 to 9. You're going to meet all the podcast contributors. Peter and I will be there. Yes, Vodka, giving you some tastes of some vodka drinks.
Mm-hmm.
This is all a free, fun event. We're going to have our idol singing. We're going to have a gay spelling bee giving away Pet Shop Boys concert tickets. We're going to give away MP3 players. We're going to give away spelling bee tickets to the show downtown. So come on out and join the fun next Monday, October 16th, 7 to 9 at Sidetrack. We'll be there and we hope you will too. So stay tuned. Listen to us. We've got more after this.
We saw a funny, funny musical called Altar Boys.
Everyone's raving about Altar Boys, the new musical comedy and winner of the Outer Critics Award for Best Musical.
Just knocked us out of our seat. They couldn't believe the dancing.
I find myself just smiling and I look around and everybody had this big smile plastered on their face.
It's really funny.
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 Over the top.
It's a musical that is absolutely hysterical.
Really incredible.
Unbelievable. The boys were awesome.
I believe in the Altar Boys.
They didn't even have to sing. They could have just stood up there.
It's fantastic.
Fantastic. Fantastic.
Fantastic.
The Altar Boys give dynamite performances with infectious energy, raves the New York Times. Their songs are convincing enough to be on MTV. The critics agree, it's hysterical. Altar Boys, you'll laugh your mass off.
All my expectations were fulfilled.
Altar Boys kicks off its national tour starting October 10th at the LaSalle Bank Theater. Tickets are on sale now at all Broadway and Chicago box offices. Call 312-902-1400 or visit BroadwayInChicago.com.
Making your travel plans for fall? Thinking about that Christmas visit to mom's house in your old bedroom? Let the experts at GayHotelDiscounts.com find the luxury you're looking for at a price you can afford. If you need a queen in Phoenix or a king in Miami, GayHotelDiscounts.com can find the perfect room for you and your partner. Visit our website for gay destination cities and extracurricular ideas to dance off that second serving of mom's apple pie. GayHotelDiscounts.com for the gay traveler in you.
Bud Light presents Real Men of Genius.
Real Men of Genius.
Today we salute you, Mr. Nudist Colony Activity Coordinator.
Mr. Nudist Colony Activity Coordinator.
Wearing nothing but a whistle and a clipboard, you're living the real American dream. Getting paid to think up fun things to do naked.
Running free.
Sure, there's danger. Vinyl chairs, sunburns, chafage, and lawn darts completely out of the question.
Watch out now.
Your keen instincts tell you to stick to activities that involve lots of bouncing and jiggling. And if that doesn't work, who cares? You're all naked.
It's your birthday.
So crack open a nice cold Bud Light, nudie boy. Because we all know, when the going gets tough, the tough get naked.
The nudist college activity coordinator.
Bud Light Beer, Anheuser-Busch, St. Louis, Missouri.
Culture Club. Culture Club. Culture Club.
Theater.
Music.
Dance.
Art.
Performance.
Provocative.
Hilarious.
Exciting.
Queer.
Innovative.
Campy.
Edgy.
Original.
Get some culture in your life.
Join the club.
For the week of October 9th, 2006, you are in Chicago's Culture Club.
Dating is hell, especially when Mr. Perfect turns out to be the son of Satan. About Face Theater presents Say You Love Satan, a diabolical gay romantic comedy now through November 11th at the Victory Gardens Greenhouse, 2257 North Lincoln Avenue. For tickets, call 773-871-3000. Tickets are selling fast, so buy yours today.
Meet the Hubbard family of Alabama in Lillian Hellman's Another Part of the Forest, now at Writers Theater. The envy of the South in 1880, the Hubbard family is deeply human, uniquely Southern, and has a reputation for success at any cost. For more on Another Part of the Forest, playing now at the Intimate Writers Theater, call 847-242-6000 or log on to writerstheater.org.
About Face Theater and Looking Glass Theater Company present Clay, a one-man hip-hop musical written and performed by Matt Sachs. Sachs is a powerhouse, says the Chicago's Tribune, and Windy City Times encourages you to rush out right now and get your tickets. Clay, playing now at the Looking Glass Theater Water Tower Works. Call 312-337-0665 or visit lookingglasstheater.org.
Remy Bumpo Theater Company presents Gore Vidal's political satire, The Best Man, an examination of the nature of people who are drawn to power and the lengths they might go to obtain the highest public office in America. The Best Man runs through November 5th at the Victory Gardens Greenhouse Theater, 2257 North Lincoln Avenue. For tickets and information, call 773-871-3000 or visit remybumpo.org. That is Remy, BUMPPO.org.
And for more Culture Club, see the Windy City Times at windycitytimes.com. And this is your Windy City Queercast News. A California appeals court ruled that the state's ban on same-sex marriage does not violate the constitutional rights of gays and lesbians. In reversing the March 2005 ruling of a San Francisco trial judge, the First District Court of Appeal decided that the ban does not discriminate because of the California's domestic partner law. Marriage Equality USA expressed disappointment with the decision and will hold pro-gay marriage community events.
And of course, in a Mark Foley update, the Stonewall Libertarians have released a statement saying that former Republican U.S. Representative Mark Foley did nothing illegal or immoral. If Foley's conduct took place in Washington, D.C., where the age of consent is 16, he could have had consensual sex with those male pages without committing any crime. Written communication with male pages who registered at Mark Foley's gaydar screen shouldn't be turned into a shameful or immoral act. That is a quote from the Stonewall Libertarians.
And the Ivy League is now unanimous in banning discrimination against students, faculty, or staff based on gender identity or expression.
Yay!
Yay! After Yale University announced that it will adopt such protections in its employment and student admission policies. Hugh Barron, gender youth activist and coordinator of Yale's Queer Political Action Committee, that's QPAC, said, "This is a tremendous first step toward making Yale a more safe place for all of its students, faculty, and staff, regardless of their gender identity or expression. The smart kids are learning what to do."
And now the gays just have to fucking get accepted. And everybody loves Cher.
Yay!
Cher! In fact, some folks love Cher so much they purchased her black 2005 Bentley for, hold your pants up, $204,000.
Hey, babes.
Say it. $204,000.
Hey, babes.
A Bob Mackie rock and roll outfit for $60,000 and her gothic revival bed for $84,000. Yes, she still is in that whole restoration gothic.
Remember Sanctuary catalog? Loved
it. Yes. In all, the star Cher raked in over $3.5 million at a Sotheby's auctions. According to Cher, part of the money will go to charity. The other part will go to remodeling her Malibu home. You know, she says she absolutely loves just buying homes, redoing them, decorating them, and selling them. So good for her. And, you know, of course, undoubtedly, some of the money will go to her Botox budget.
Hey, babes, take away my wrinkles, babes.
Yeah. Chastity, get in here. I can't move my face. Chastity.
Chazzy, babes. Chazzy.
And that's the Windy City Queercast News.
This is Logan Schwartzengrubenier from the 25th Annual Putnam County Spelling Bee. And my two dads and I are completely buzzing about this week's Bee in My Bonnet. This bee is as hectic as Rosh Hashanah at the Schwartzengrubenier household. This year, for the first time ever, my dads let me indulge in the traditional New Year snack of apples and honey. Usually, I can only have spinach and honey because it's healthier. But not this year! Then, to help bring in 5767, we all went to the premiere of the new movie Jackass Part 2. But are my dads and I the only ones who thought this movie was a documentary about President Bush during his second term? This is Logan Schwartzengrubenier, and that's the bee in my bonnet. Be sure to check us out on the web at spellingbeethemusical.com/Chicago.
And hey, folks, it's time for your Windy City Queercast giveaway. We've got tickets to see Put the Nuns in Charge at the Royal George Theater Center. You can use these tickets anytime between now and the end of the year. So if you want to win tickets to see Put the Nuns in Charge at the Royal George Theater, make sure you put nuns in the subject of an email. Send that email to wcmgpromo@aol.com and make sure you include your name and your address so that we can mail you those tickets.
Thank you, parents. We hope you enjoyed the fifth grader's orchestra recital.
What if wherever you went, you got more than you were expecting?
Hi, Daddy!
Hey, thanks for watching the kids.
Anytime.
How were they?
Good.
No problems?
Nope. Oh, and I taught Noah his multiplication tables, and I've got Wendy reading Shakespeare.
At LaSalle Bank, we think more is precisely what you should expect. More responsiveness, more service, more convenience. In a word, more.
Hey, Billy.
Hi, Mr. Schmidt.
What are you doing in the bushes?
Oh, I was getting your newspaper.
My newspaper?
Yeah, I must have been off balance when I threw it and I totally missed the porch.
Oh.
I just didn't want you to have to go looking for it.
Thanks, Billy.
And with any luck, our philosophy will catch on everywhere. LaSalle Bank, making more possible. LaSalle Bank N.A., member FDIC.
Windy City Queercast is brought to you in part by Broadway in Chicago and Altar Boys, the award-winning musical comedy spoof of a fictional Christian pop group questioning their faith in each other. For tickets, visit BroadwayInChicago.com.
Hey, pigs! This is Judy Tenuta, the Love Goddess, and you're listening to Queercast. It makes my arm on slam dance. It can happen.
Got something to say? Call us today. 312-21-BE-GAY.
My, it's been a bumpy ride. So curious to be still alive and hungry for you.
Daphne Rubin Vega has one of those voices that covers so many shades of the rainbow, it's almost impossible to believe. Playing parts as diverse in Mimi the Musical Rent, where she was nominated for a Tony, Magenta in the Rocky Horror Show, a detective in the movie Wild Things, and singing on everything from the soundtrack to Labyrinth to her gig in the girl group Pajama Party, and of course on her solo CDs, she runs the musical and acting gambit. We're pleased to have her with us on the show today, Daphne. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Hey, Daphne. What's such Hello. A thrill. Such a thrill.
Such a thrill. And such a broad career. I mean, you've been in the theater, you've been on the big screen, you've been on pop radio, and you've had all these great CDs. Let's start at the beginning. Tell us about finding your voice really early on when you were young.
Oh, God. Before I found my voice, I remember singing with my best friend in junior high school. Her mom was a singer, and she used to sing stuff like, you know, jazzy stuff, imitating her mom, like, you know, green dolphin streets of blood. It's just, I don't know what she was singing, but I would always try to sing along with her. And one day she just stopped singing abruptly and she said, Daph, don't sing. And basically, like my son right now, I cried inside. I didn't sing for a while until, please forgive me.
It's okay. It's our first baby on the podcast, right? I have to say.
Go back into your cage.
Famous baby.
Famous baby. Bye, Luca. See you later. I didn't sing for a while after that until a friend of mine whose sister is a very famous, fantastic singer was like, oh, stop it, Daph, you can sing. And he started to sort of, you know, we would just riff together and sing on the way to the roller skating rink kind of thing. And he was actually the catalyst who actually got me to the recording studio where I did some soundtrack for the movie Labyrinth. There were a lot of famous people on that soundtrack, and I was not one of the famous people, but I was among all these fantastic divas, and I thought, if I don't sing, I'm just going to die right now. And so I went up to the producer, and I asked him to let me sing. I didn't want to get paid or anything. I just wanted to be in the studio singing along with all these folks, and he gave me a pair of headphones, and that was kind of the beginning of like the famous story. I mean, Luther Vandross was in that session, David Bowie, wow. Of course, it was his song, Chaka Khan, Sissy Houston, Fonzie Thornton. It was amazing. And so I put all those people down on my resume, right?
Good for you, girl. You
yes,
knew how
girl.
To work New York.
Work it.
You know, I was, it wasn't even, if I knew how crafty I was being, I probably would have freaked out. But, one thing led to another. So when I got into the girl group Pajama Party and they saw my fancy credits, they just said, okay, she's in, you know. I was cute then, and I was very enthusiastic. I was like, I'll do it, you know. Who's going to choreograph? I'll do it. Who's going to sing? I'll do it, you know. So that was a big education. That's kind of how I got started singing, actually.
So you found the voice, you started singing, you got into Pajama Party. Then how did you get in the theater? Because those sometimes seem like two different streams.
They're completely different. I mean, I always wanted to be an actress. I always wanted to act. Musical theater specifically was never my thing. I mean, with the exception of The Sound of Music, because I thought that that was just a movie that completely opened my heart up as a kid, and I thought, that's what I want to do. But then, you know, I forgot about it and listened to rock and roll and, you know, fucked up in school and just, you know, did regular underachiever kind of kid things until I picked up a backstage and just started going on auditions. And so they were kind of separate. And I guess they came together when Rent happened, because I thought that it was legitimizing to keep my acting away from my singing. That musical theater was some sort of like bastard derivative of the real thing. But when Rent came along, I wanted to do it. It was like, it was a twist on La Boheme that I thought was very it just really spoke to me. I mean, at that time, I didn't really know what it was going to really be about. But when I heard about Mimi and that she was, instead of a consumptive seamstress at the turn of the century, she was, you know, a stripper junkie with AIDS, I thought, wow, that's something I'd like to try. And you know, when you get to a point where you have nothing to lose, I think that was pretty much where I was in my non-career, because I was just trying to just get a next job and a next job. And I was working the makeup counter at Patricia Fields and working for a sculptor who let me get off and go to auditions when I had to. She was very, very supportive. So I was very lucky to get into Rent, but I think part of one of the ingredients of maybe getting that role was that at least at that point I had enough singing chops to make the cut. Secondly, I lived in that world of the East Village, and you know, and finally, I was at a point where I just thought, look, I'm not from this world. I don't have anything to lose, so let me give it what I do have. You know, so I went in, and I think I sang Roxanne by the Police. So, yeah, I freaked out when I actually got the part. I was like, oh my God, that time Mimi didn't sing the ballad Without You. It was other characters in the play, and by the second workshop time around, they had given that ballad to the character Mimi, and I was deathly intimidated by ballads. I thought I'd be completely outed for the faker that I felt like I was, and so I'd call Jonathan Larson up like every spare minute and say, well, you know, what's the secret? What do I have to do besides just singing it every day and trying to get it right? And he said, well, it's really simple. You just have to make us cry. So I guess I did that.
Well, and did you realize when you got into the room with all of those peoples that your lives were just going to be altered and a fame that reverberated from almost everyone in that group? Like this big gift that Jonathan Larson really passed on to all of you.
Yeah, I can't honestly say that I thought I knew what was gonna really happen. I knew that after having done the first workshop in 1994 that that it was something that I had never had so much fun doing a project in my life. I thought, okay, I know what it's like to perform and actually love it, to live and breathe this world and put my whole heart and soul into a character and really, you know, step up with a bunch of people who set the bar high.
Yeah.
But I didn't know that it was going to turn into the phenomenon, really, that it became. And I have to say that I think a lot of that is greatly due to the loss of Jonathan Larson.
Right.
You know, I think he just got the big, you know, the macabre Klieg light of attention focused on us.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not sure. I think that it would have been successful because there were people who it spoke to and continues to, but I think the fact that he died really added an extra element of drama that we could have never created.
So you went on to work.
I hate to say that, but it's true.
Yeah, yeah. You went on to be in some movies that, especially for the gay and lesbian community, really had huge echoes. Flawless, Joel Schumacher directing you with the fabulous Philip Seymour Hoffman. And then on the other side for the girls, Wild Things with Matt Damon, Kevin Bacon. You've worked with some amazing. Matt Dillon. Did I say somebody else?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I said Damon, didn't I? Sorry. Matt Dillon. You've worked with some amazing leading men.
That wasn't just a movie for the lesbians.
I know, but the ladies love it.
But
Peter doesn't
say
know
that.
How much I love that movie.
Oh, it's great, but the straight men like it.
Well, they sure do. Yes, but
you know, in a
they
way,
get everything, Daphne. So you know, the straight men get everything.
They do get everything, don't they?
Yeah, we have to let this one be for the lesbians, just for the next ten minutes.
That's
just
for the girls.
Maybe just for me, honestly.
Yeah, for you. That's why we did it.
But what have these experiences been like working with these amazing leading men? Like, give me some thoughts on. Give me some. I know, but they're really some powerful actors. I mean, tell me some thoughts on Kevin Bacon.
Just great guy, wonderful to talk and talk shop like musically with.
Uh huh.
Very incredible sense of humor, which I think is really hot. Just a good guy, you know.
Matt Dillon is such a heartthrob. I mean, from
Matt
such a
Dillon,
young age, does he wear that well?
Yes. Did he wear it well?
Yes.
Did he wear his heart throbbiness well?
Yes.
Yeah.
He just seems like he would smolder around a set. He just seems so smoldering.
Yeah, he had the great Latin music collection, which makes him even hotter. You know?
Look at you, so
and an art collection too. He's no slouch on the art front, and he loves to read, and he's interested in all aspects of film. So I really tried to stay close to him because he knew better than almost anybody on the set how to get lit. You know, no pun intended. I don't mean to get stoned,
I know.
But how lighting worked. You know, I didn't know anything about that. I was like, what do you do? So, and we would joke around. I would tell him that, you know, when it was his close-up, I think that we had a scene together, and you know, we'd cut to close-ups, and all these actors that you've mentioned, actually, I have to say, would stay for each other's close-up, which is not always the case.
Yeah.
So really generous guys, but I remember telling him in one close-up where we were talking and the camera was on him that I wasn't wearing any underwear, and it was just brilliant to see his face change colors. It was a lot of fun. We do stupid things like that. You know?
And Philip Seymour Hoffman just so transformed in Flawless.
Oh, yeah.
And obviously is just such a master chameleon. You're actually working with him again. Tell us about Phil.
Well, Phil is a co-artistic director of the Labyrinth Theater Company, which is a theater company that I was involved with way back in the day when I was hardly even a singer, actually. He, like you said, he's masterful at the way he approaches his craft, and he's fearless with it. So he really has the availability to become whatever he desires because of a certain kind of just courage and fearlessness that I don't see very often in actors. We never got to work together on that film. We didn't have any scenes together, but in 2007, the Labyrinth Theater Company is producing a four-hander play called Jack Goes Boating, and he's in it, I'm in it. An actor by the name of John Ortiz, who's the other co-artistic director of The Labyrinth, and Beth Cole, who's a member. So it's this baby that we've been cultivating for a while, doing readings and many workshops of, and we're going to put it up in 2007.
Fantastic.
So that's at the turn of the year for you. You just finished two huge shows this year, Bernarda Alba and Everything's Turning Into Beautiful. And
what a challenge Martirio and Bernarda Alba must have been. You're so beautiful and you're so sexy to play an unloved, you know, sister is.
Well, you know, the way we approached it, I kind of had like polio scolio girl. I had a big hump on my back. And
She's supposed to be just this ugly, you know, no one would love her kind of.
Yeah, I think that the way it was dealt with for us, not that, you know, I can't be ugly. But that was really, I mean, and in the book you can also get it. I mean, there, it's the mother's just terrorizing her children that makes them think that they're ugly.
It's, right.
It's the environment that they live in which makes, which, you know, enables them to feel completely unworthy of a man. And also because we have so much debt that, you know, a girl is only as good as her dowry.
Right.
And so we don't have much dowry going on except for the oldest daughter because she inherited everything. So all that stuff adds wood to the fire of are feeling ugly.
You get these juicy roles,
yeah,
Daphne.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you got a big one coming up.
And you've got a huge one coming up.
Yeah, Fantine. I think, you know, there's this sort of repetition. There is a diversity in the roles that I play, but, you know, when you think of Mimi and Canary Mary and in Fucking A, I did a Susan Laurie Parks play where I played, you know, the prostitute with the golden heart. And Fantine in Les Miserables, it's these sluts with a big heart. It's a thematic, it's a theme that I find myself going back to. I guess I'm fascinated by the purity of heart of some of these characters who give their body easily and yet retain a certain naivete, a certain part of their soul that isn't touched by the corruption of society, really. I mean, and Fantine is really the victim. She's really a symbol of how society, particularly in the French Revolution, has just degenerated the proletariat and women. And, you know, the best jobs that you can get if you want to be independent is to sell your body. That still kind of can be applicable. I know you're going to get phone calls or something, but
that's okay.
No, it's totally true.
It's absolutely true.
Now, when is the revival? Is the revival up yet? When are you up for Les Mis?
We are in rehearsals right now, and first preview is October 24th.
Okay.
We're in the midst of some serious rehearsals. It's kind of tedious because we're just trying to deal with the turntable stage and restaging a lot of things, I think, for the better. I'm not very well versed with the original Les Mis, so it's all fantastically new to me and very exciting.
We need tickets kind of like, to New York, everybody. We got to go see Les Mis. We have to go see you with Philip Seymour Hoffman in January and Jack Goes Boating. There's just all kinds.
Yes. There's all kinds of stuff.
And you have to listen to the CD while you're doing all this.
Absolutely. That's what I was going to get to.
Absolutely.
Because you talked about these characters with sort of this thematic thing running. There's still the diamond of naivete inside of them. And the album is called Redemption Songs right now. And it's just come out. And it's, I think the most beautiful thing for me was that every single song sounded so radically different, yet they were all kind of pining around this awesome theme of redemption. But for you, how did you put such a collection together? How did you and when did you have time to do all this? That's what I'm impressed with too.
Well, when I was pregnant, you know, I had just gotten off the play Anna in the Tropics, and so my character wore wigs, so I felt totally free to do whatever I wanted to with my hair. So I knew that I wanted, you know, to start a family. So I went blonde. As a result, I fried my hair. And then and so I cut my hair. And then I did another play with short blondish hair, and then I was pregnant. So I'm just saying all that to say that my body and my self-image, was radically changing. Suddenly from like this curly brown hair, I've got this short blonde hair, and then my body's just exploding and and swelling, and I just felt like a big fat Q-tip, really. And it was really strange to, it felt like I was transforming. I was letting go of one part of me, and I was completely entering another unknown future. It was exciting, my pregnancy was actually very, you know, people complain about this and that, morning sickness and swollen feet, and I don't really get a whole lot of that. I mean, towards the end, I started to, you know, get this thing out of me. But but my image of myself was changing. There was a lot of stuff with my family, my husband's family. We had a lot of close relatives had passed away. You know, I had lost both my brothers. It was a very painful, painful, transformative time. And meanwhile, you know, I was going to have a baby, and you know, we don't know how things are going to turn out. You know, it's just flying on a lot of faith. You know, simultaneously, you know, my friends are working, and Rent the Movie is coming out, and it wasn't so much that I felt like, oh my God, I have to do this movie. 5 years ago, I felt like I had to do the movie, but I had just begun to be okay with letting that go, and then the movie came along, and then all my friends were doing it. I started to feel like I just didn't know what the future held. You know, kind of like uninvited to the party. Like, will I ever work again? Will I be able to juggle motherhood and career? And I knew that music was always, well, for the last, you know, 15 years, a way that I could express myself and vent. And I had a band, and, you know, prior to that, they had been my babies, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I wrote songs. You know, Redemption Songs by Bob Marley was a song that I always wished I had written. And so it was a good sort of hub for the piece, you know, which was kind of like a snapshot of that part of my life where things were changing in a turbulent way that was exciting and painful and, you know, good and bad. I mean, felt good and felt bad, you know. So hence the diversity.
Yeah. It's quite an emotional collection, too. I was sitting at my desk thinking, okay, I can't focus on work. I need to listen to this song right now. And I just sort of lost myself.
Yeah, I think a lot of them, yeah, it just came from, like, if my heart were a body, it would have been the bowels of my heart, you know. It was just, you know, and even when you're going through, I mean, death is a transformative experience. But, you know, I mean, there's a lot of emotions that go around death. You know, anger is one of them, rage and sadness and grief, but also a sense that having lost many people in my life, I know that for me, they live in me. You know, that you only lose them to the degree that you choose to forget them, in a way.
Absolutely.
So that was going on, and that for me, you know, I'm not a very religious person, but I think, you know, God is everywhere, which is actually the last thing that I say on the CD. That, you know, it belongs to no hall, no particular peoples, you know, have a corner on God, so to speak. And I think that was really important for me, because faith is important when, you know, you just in a dark place.
Absolutely.
Well, such a beautiful CD.
Such a beautiful
CD.
Thank
you.
Such a beautiful CD. We're going to tell folks we're going to leave with the opening track, Citizens of the World, because I love how world, and it has so many different sounds, and it has so many different parts to it. Folks, DaphneRubinVega.com. The link will be in the show notes. If you're in New York, definitely get tickets to see her in Les Mis. I mean, you can go to see Les Mis, but please, come on. Go see her in Les Mis. I think that's totally worth it. 2007, Jack Goes Boating with Philip Seymour Hoffman in January of next year. Check out the CD, Redemption Songs. Daphne, thank you so much for being with
us. You're welcome.
Thanks,
Daphne. Have a great time, and give my love to Chicago.
Will do.
Okay.
Thanks for listening to another Windy City Queercast. This program is brought to you in part by Bud Light. Bud Light, always worth it.
And LaSalle Bank. LaSalle Bank, making more possible.
And American Airlines, offering exciting GLBT vacations online at aa.com/rainbow.
And Broadway in Chicago. For the hottest tickets in town, visit broadwayinchicago.com. So that's our show. I'm Amy Matheny.
And I'm Peter Maverick. Please comment on our shows at WindyCityQueercast.com and in iTunes. And you can email us for all of our giveaways at WCMGPromo@AOL.com.
And don't forget to join us as our guests. It's a fun, free event, Monday, October 16th, for our official launch party of the Windy City Queercast, all happening at Sidetrack, 3349 North Halsted, from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m.
The next Queercast is only days away, so don't miss it. Windy City Queercast, queer, and now.
Get this podcast and more great ones like it on the High Performance Podcast Delivery Network from Podshow and Limelight Networks.
I love it.